නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස ඒකායනෝ අයම් භික්කවේ මග්ගෝ සත්තානං විසුද්ධියා ශෝක පරිද්දවානං සමතික්කමාය දුක්ඛ දෝමනස්සානං අත්ථගමාය ඥායස්ස අධිගමාය නිබ්බානස්ස සච්චිකිරියාය යදිදං චත්තාරෝ සතිපට්ඨානාති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta as the theme of this Sutta series. Now we have discussed till Dhammanupassana. Actually, we went through Kayanupassana, Vedananupassana, Chittanupassana, and in the Dhammanupassana section, now we are dealing with Bojjhangas. So, Bojjhanga, the term Bojjhanga literally means Bodhaya Sangvattatiti. So, in one occasion, when one monk came in front of the Buddha and asked, Bojjhanga Bojjhangati Bhante Bojjhanti, Kittavatanukho Bhante Bojjhangati Bojjhanti. Awakening factors are mentioned. So, why Bojjhanga Bojjhanga is the term used? So, what is the exact meaning of this? So, then Buddha mentioned, Bodhaya Sangvattantiti Kho Bhikkhu Tasma Bojjhangati Bojjhanti. Since these factors are leading towards awakening, we can say even enlightenment, since that is why they are called Bojjhanga. So, that means that we have to develop certain positive qualities, positive skills in the mind in order to attain enlightenment or in order to develop awakening. Now, last time we discussed using especially Anapanasati Sutta, how one may develop Bojjhanga from its beginning. And say, for example, if one keeps one's attention on breath again and again, so at the beginning it may drift. So we can't maintain our attention on the breath because our mind has so many different kind of hindrances. So as a result, it may drift to the past, may go along with various memories, and again it can move towards the future, thinking about various fantasies, daydreaming, and planning, etc. Now, assume that one consistently doing this, bringing back to the breath again and again, and as a result, and one day he is able to accomplish mindfulness, so establish mindfulness on breath. Now there is no wavering, so the mind stays with the breath, in breath, out breath, in breath, out breath. So likewise, consecutively, all the breaths can be mindfully comprehended. Now this is where Buddha mentioned the beginning of the Sati Sambojjhanga, mindfulness awakening factor. So once one doing it for considerable period of time, again you are doing it tomorrow, again doing it next week, in the next month, so likewise one is developing it, and as a result the mindfulness enlightenment factor is developing, and ultimately it will come to its culmination. Now not only that, while doing that, one may inquire onto the breath. Now say for example, one is well established on the breath, and as a result he does not simply do kind of a surface glancing, rather he now investigate what is really happening in the breath, how it behaves, what are its characteristics, is it long, is it short, is it sort of warm or cool. So likewise the subtle aspects are being inquired. Now this is where the Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga, the investigation awakening factor, starts to develop. So this searching, this is examining, investigating quality helps to develop Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga. And when one does it again and again, it will ultimately develop and comes to the culmination. Now, in order to do that, fair amount of energy is needed, because none of these phenomena are interested phenomena. They are extremely sort of, we can say, boring phenomena, quite equanimous phenomena. You can't watch them without any energy. Say, for example, if you are watching a movie, you don't need any energy. So the movie itself is grabbing your attention. But on the other hand, these all typical meditation objects, the present moment phenomena arising throughout the body and in the mind, are not that attractive. In such situation, we need consistent energy being supplied, otherwise you can't maintain this attention. So this is where the energy enlightenment factor or virya sambojjhanga being developed. And again, sometimes mind backs up and it sort of become lethargic, lazy. On even such situation, one has to energize the mind and encourage the mind. So that actually leads to develop the energy enlightenment factor or effort enlightenment factor. Now, when one doing this, so there are situations that everything happens smoothly. One doesn't have to struggle. Rather, everything happens in an order. Say, each and every breath, mind is very well established there, and one can examine, and even the subtle aspects of the breath being understood. On such situation, the mind become rapturous. I mean, you can be a little happy because now the task is accomplished. So then and there you are able to make a success. So that leads to a kind of a happiness, kind of a contentment. And contentment leads to sort of a happiness. And that is where the Piti Sambojjhanga, rapture enlightenment factor or awakening factor, going to develop. Now as one develop such kind of a atmosphere in the mind, so the mind become fairly calm down, tranquil, and the body also calms down and tranquil. Now this is where the Passaddhi enlightenment factor or tranquility awakening factor being developed. Now the mind is really calm, quiet, and everything happens smoothly, and there is no wavering, there is no distractions. Now at the same time, when mind now feels comfortable, body feels comfortable, body feels calm, quiet, and really light, you feel like floating in the air, so something like that. I mean, basically the all required positive qualities are now fairly in favor of you. On that situation, the mind is well concentrated. Sukhino chittang samadhiyati. So Buddha mentioned, when the body and mind feel comfortable, it is easily mind get concentrated. So the samadhi enlightenment factor being developed. Now assume everything is happening well. Now nothing to do, because everything happens by itself. The mind itself has undertaken the task. It has got his momentum, and you have nothing to interfere now. It's a matter of simply witnessing the process. So you take the back seat and simply witness the process. So this is where the equanimity enlightenment factor being developed, upekkha, because there is nothing to do. It's a matter of witnessing the process. So this is where the equanimity enlightenment factor develops. Now Buddha mentions this first stage of developing enlightenment factors. So but there is another level, another stage that we can recognize in many suttas, another level of, or another strategy of developing enlightenment factors. Now that is being explained in the Anapanasati Sutta itself, where Buddha mentioned, so how to develop katam bhavitaja bhikkave satta bojjhanga katam bahuli kata vijja vimuttim paripurenti. So if one, how to develop these awakening factors in order to accomplish vijja and vimutti. Vijja is the knowledge, vimutti is the freedom. Now this is in a way fairly kind of advanced practice. It is not the typical beginner's practice, but rather someone who has a fair amount of understanding about the vipassana. And now he has to get on to a different approach. That is what Buddha now trying to explain us, where how to develop these awakening factors so that it will lead towards the freedom and the knowledge. So there Buddha mentioned, Hidda bhikkave bhikkhu sati sambojjhangam bhaveti viveka nisitang viraga nisitang nirodha nisitang hosagga parinami. Dhamma vichaya sambojjhangam bhaveti viveka nisitang viraga nisitang nirodha nisitang hosagga parinami. So likewise he explained all the seven enlightenment factors. So what this means, now all the enlightenment factors have to be developed viveka nisitang. So kind of appreciating seclusion. So the mind now does not associate typical objects like sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations and mental objects. So rather it has found its seclusion. It has found its own island. It has found its freedom. Now more and more, now mind associates that freedom. Mind associates that seclusion. It likes to be alone. So that aloneness, that freedom, that seclusion is what now the mind associates. Viveka nisitang, viraga nisitang. So all other phenomena, as I mentioned, sights, sounds, etc., are now looked at in a dispassionate manner. There is no kind of a grasping. There is no sort of an attraction. Rather, where whatever happens, so mind undertakes them with dispassion. And again, even to this state, this very secluded state, so this sort of freedom also look at in a dispassionate manner. It is not that yogi is attracted or being bounded into this, even to this seclusion. He takes it in a lighter manner. So his mind has no sort of a strong grasping onto this atmosphere or to this freedom or this what to say as the seclusion, because that is also being fairly balanced by the viraga. The term viraga means dispassion. So you can't have passion to any side, not from the external objects, sight, sounds, smells, tastes, etc., and not even to this very freedom. So it's a kind of a very kind of subtle, balanced approach where mind has to be maintained. And nirodha nisitang. So if any kind of phenomena happens, so one is interested of looking at its nirodha, the cessation. And typically mind rests in the nirodha. So there is no new phenomena being paid attention. Rather, one maintains one's attention on the nirodha or the cessation. Vasagga parinami. And the attitude in the mind is the letting go. Rather than grasping, that is the typical approach in the mind. Now the mind is completely in a different approach, that is the attitude of letting go. So this is how Buddha mentioned that one has to further develop enlightenment factors so that one may lead to the knowledge and the freedom, vijja and vimutti. Now further Buddha mentioned in Aggi Sutta, that is in the Bojjhanga Samyutta, where we have to properly balance these enlightenment factors. Now we can recognize there are three groups. One group pertaining to sort of an excitement of the mind or the activation of the mind. Another group leading to the tranquilizing of the mind. And there is another one actually doing the whole observation, the monitoring aspect. Now the group which is making the mind active, exciting, is the one Dhamma Vichaya Virya Piti. That is investigation awakening factor, then effort awakening factor, and the rupture awakening factor. So Buddha mentioned, so when mind feels lethargic, if the mind is little going towards the laziness, then you have to arouse energy. You have to start to further investigate. You have to sort of arouse rupture. So that is how those three enlightenment factors have to be given prominence. On the other hand, if mind is already too much excited, it's now mind has too much excited, now agitated, now more distractions are happening. On that situation, these three should not be developed. Instead, the other three. Other three, passaddhi, samadhi, upekkha. Passaddhi is the tranquility, samadhi is the concentration, upekkha is the equanimity. So those three have to be developed and those three have to be given prominence because the mind has too much excited. So it has distracted or become restless. On that situation, that activating enlightenment factors should not be developed. Instead, the tranquilizing enlightenment factors have to be developed. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned Satiko aham bhikkhave sabbattikam vadami. Mindfulness awakening factor, I say, is required everywhere, every time. So you can see the mindfulness is the one doing the balancing part, is the one doing the monitoring part, and it will give us kind of an indication, so which side is too much, which side is less. Accordingly, we have to do the balancing. So the mindfulness is the one doing this whole supervision and the whole monitoring part. So therefore, Buddha mentions there is no limit in developing mindfulness. You can continuously develop mindfulness, and also that also has to be in the vivekanisitang, viraganisitang, nirodhanisitang, ossaga parinaming. That means you have to maintain a well-balanced mind and dispassionate attitude, and bends towards the dispassion, bends towards the seclusion and establishing cessation, and the with the attitude of letting go. Now, on such atmosphere, you have to maintain mindfulness. Now, when one develops like this, now the enlightenment factors are also evolving. It is not that enlightenment factors remain at a particular level, but rather they also constantly evolve. Say, for example, at the beginning, when we started explaining using Anapanasati Sutta, how these various awakening factors are being developed, so we mentioned that the mind is well established in, say, breath. That is where the concentration, that is where the attention is well established. Now, when it comes to the second level, where one develops further, so at that time, it is not that one is grasping any object. Rather, mind now tends to maintain a very lighter atmosphere, free atmosphere, calm, tranquil, peaceful atmosphere. On that situation, it is not concentrated. Mind is not concentrated or absorbed to anything. Rather, mind has kind of a expansive stillness. So that is where the we can say the Samadhi Sambojjhanga. So Samadhi Sambojjhanga has completely sort of evolved not to kind of concentrating onto a particular object. Rather, now it has kind of an expanded stillness. Mind is not distracting, but there is no grasping either. There is nothing to grasp, nothing to hold, but complete stillness there is in the mind. It's kind of an expansive stillness. So you can see the enlightenment factors themselves are evolving, and that is how Buddha is taking us more towards the, we can say, the realization. Now, it is not that only Anapanasati or Satipatthana themselves are the only method of developing enlightenment factors. Now, if you consider Bodhyanga Sangyutta, that is where various suttas dealing with the development of the enlightenment factors are being collected. So there, Buddha mentioned even various other techniques like Brahma Vihara, Metta, Mudita, Karuna, Upekha, loving kindness, Karuna, the compassion, Mudita, the what you call as joy, and then Upekha, the equanimity. So those Brahma Viharas are also contributing towards the development of enlightenment factors. And again, if one can do any other even vipassana, say one develops various proper perceptions like anicca sanya, anatta sanya, adinava sanya. So likewise, there are many positive, correct perceptions if one develops. So those are also contributing towards the development of enlightenment factors. And if one develops Navasivatika, actually that is included in the Satipatthana. And Satipatthana comprehensively helps to develop enlightenment factors. So likewise, there are many other methods also available to develop these awakening factors. So therefore, Buddha mentioned, say for example, in Abhe Sutra, in Bodhyanga Sangyutta, so if one develops seven awakening factors, so that is actually leading to to know the things as they truly are. So how one has to develop? That is by associating seclusion, associating viraga, the dispassion, associating cessation, and maintaining an atmosphere of letting go. So if one develops with that atmosphere, with that with that kind of a perspective, then one can get a better understanding of everything. So one get the yathabhuta jnana dassana. So he may understand the things as they truly are, because the mind is fairly calm, tranquil, unbiased, and good clarity of mind is available, and whatever happens is quite vigilant because you are utterly mindful. So likewise, the background for the development of wisdom is very well there. So Buddha mentioned, so one is able to gain fair understanding of the reality. So that further develop leads to jnana dassana, though that is the vision and the knowledge. Now likewise, we can see, so these enlightenment factors or the awakening factors are basically leading towards more and more understanding, more and more tranquility, more and more calming down, more and more peace, more and more non-grasping, more and more stillness and expansion in the mind. Now this is a kind of a different approach when compared with various other, say, concentration practices. Say for example, in samatha practice or various other religious practices, say other religions, so there are the mind being concentrated, mind being absorbed, mind being narrowed down, limited to something. But in the Buddha's approach, at the beginning it may have to be sort of concentrated, it may have to be also attentive onto a particular subject, but that is not the situation when it comes to the second level or the latter levels. There the mind releases everything. There the mind recognizes its own freedom, its own seclusion, and mind becomes sort of expansive. And now, that since there is no grasping, it is still. Since there is no grasping, since there are no distractions, mind becomes still. So this is the kind of a difference we can say in the Buddhist practice as well, and with compared with the other sort of contemplative practices. Now there are not only that, even the development of the enlightenment factors seems have helped even the Buddha and the great Arahants even to overcome their certain bodily illnesses. Now in one occasion, Venerable Mahamoggallana was staying at Gijjakuta mountain in that caves, and there he became extremely ill. Now at that time Buddha approached him and asked, how are you doing? Are you getting well? Is your sort of ailment, disease calming down, or is it becoming worse? There Venerable Moggallana answers, Bhante, I can't bear. Now this sickness is increasing, it is extremely difficult, there are severe pains are happening. So likewise, he explains how painful he is living at the moment because of this bodily illness. At that situation, Buddha recalls about the development of enlightenment factors. Now this is where a beautiful example that even the Arahants has gone through bodily illnesses. Actually, the development of the enlightenment factors have given fair strength to the mind. So the mind, or what we call as a psychophysical type of illnesses, may be reduced, because there are what we call as psychosomatic diseases may be really reduced, because now you have a fairly healthy mind. Because majority of the bodily diseases have a severe impact coming from the mind. So now the development of enlightenment factors themselves have contributing towards sort of a healthy mind, and that leads to a healthy body. But still, there may be situations body may going through various diseases, maybe due to say bad food, kind of food poisoning type of thing, and due to climatic changes, and maybe even the because of the past karma, or someone else have make kind of intentional harm. So likewise, there may be various other reasons for the body to get sick. Now, Venerable Mahamoggallana also somehow became sick, and at that time Buddha approached him and asked what's his situation. And once he mentioned that he become serious, the ailment is not reducing, rather recovering, or but rather it is now increasing. So there Buddha recollects these seven enlightenment factors, how these being developed and how it may be leading to the understanding, the awakening, enlightenment. Now, as Buddha recalls all these, so Venerable Mahamoggallana sort of seems regaining his mental power, regaining his sort of mental energy, and complete, composed, contented, balanced, lighter atmosphere, expansive atmosphere in the mind. So now he is able to recover from the illness. Similar thing happened to Venerable Maha Kassapa also. He was residing at another place, and there he was severely ill, and that there also Buddha approached and similarly recited these seven enlightenment factors. After the recitation, Venerable Maha Kassapa also recovered from his illness. At another occasion, Buddha himself was sick, and Venerable Maha Chunda was attending him, and Buddha requested Venerable Maha Chunda to recite seven enlightenment factors. Now, after hearing the seven enlightenment factors, so Buddha seems regaining the Buddha also regained the health, bodily health, and he completely recovered from the illness. Now we can see several points from here. One thing is that Buddha, the Arahants, are also human beings, and they also subjected to various bodily illnesses. But on the other hand, the mental power they have even helped to overcome these illnesses and to sort of recover from these illnesses. Because you can see, I mean, irrespective of they being Arahant, still there's a significant impact of bodily health towards the mind. So their mind, though it is completely liberated, still couldn't sort of have the energy when it was completely sick to completely recover from the sickness. But the recollection of these enlightenment factors seems to given them so more kind of an energetic, rapturous, balanced, tranquil atmosphere strengthened in the mind, and that again has helped them to regain the health. Now, on the other hand, understanding the state of the mind, so which side is now good, or whether the mind is excited, become restless, become agitated, or the mind is too much drowsy, lethargic. So likewise, we have to observe the mind, monitor the mind, and as a result, that observation happens through the mindfulness. And now mindfulness, after being aware through mindfulness what is the state of the mind, so we have to, as I mentioned, to develop either this activating enlightenment factors or the tranquilizing enlightenment factors. Now there we can understand those are to be balanced. And when it comes to the development of the Bodhjanga, so the recognizing Bodhjanga, the awakening factor is one thing. So there are seven awakening factors: mindfulness awakening factor, investigation awakening factor, effort awakening factor, rupture awakening factor, tranquility awakening factor, concentration or stillness awakening factor, and the equanimity awakening factor. So once we are observing the mind, we should be able to recognize the quality of the mind. So this quality indicates kind of a group work of all these enlightenment factors. So, because of the Buddha, we can say that we get to know all these very subtle aspects of the mind. But if we are able to, with the knowledge given by the Buddha, if we are able to observe the mind, so we may be able to recognize to some extent what is the quality of the mind, what is the state of the mind, what enlightenment factors are present, what are the ones now excessive, or what are the ones not developed. So likewise, one has to do this monitoring part, reflecting part. Now, assume that some is not present, or something is weak, or sometimes excited, sometimes drowsy. So the respective group enlightenment factors are to be developed. Assume that nothing is, so if something is available and you feel is not adequate, now that has to be further developed. If something is not present, that has to be also aroused and developed. We have to find reasons, we have to find different methods to make them available. Say, for example, you found you at one time you are not mindful, you are unmindful at that moment. So assume that you understood, okay, but today mindfulness is fairly weak, my mind is scattered, and again it's going to too much distractions. So now you have to strengthen the mindfulness, you have to strengthen the calming down, because the mind has become restless. Now mind has to be tranquilized, so the it has to be further concentrated. So likewise, so we have to in kind of a guard of the mind. Always we have to be in guard, on guard of the mind, and so that once we are able to recognize the state of the mind properly, we can take the corrective measure. Now, there are certain other suttas. So if I refer, say this Abhay Sutta in Bodhjhanga Samyutta, so Buddha mentioned that these hindrances and the Bodhjhangas are fairly opposite to each other, where if one doesn't know how to free oneself from the hindrances, so that actually leads to Ajnanam Adassanam. So that means the complete ignorance and the complete sort of blinding. So one's mind is completely blinded and completely ignorant. So that is where we simply allow the hindrance to govern our mind, and we are not taking care of the mind, and we are not knowing how to keep away these hindrances. So that is where Buddha mentioned is the cause that will lead to ignorance. But on the other hand, if one knows about the enlightenment factors, there Buddha mentioned that is the cause, that is the knowledge which is leading to the awakening, leading to the knowledge, leading to the vision, jnana dasana. So leading to the vision and the knowledge, that is where you know about the enlightenment factors. So the enlightenment factors and the hindrances, therefore, are quite opposite to each other. Now, on the other hand, assume that you get to know that mind is somewhat become lustful. So at that time, say you are anyway developing mindfulness, at what given moment, due because of the say unmindfulness, or because of the non-guarding of the mind, you are a little careless about the situation, so mind has become somewhat lustful. At that moment, assume that you get to know that. So at that very moment, okay, you have to come out of it, not to become a victim of it, have to come out of it, and now have to establish mindfulness. So that is where you are no more a victim of the hindrance. Previously you are driven by the hindrance, but at the very moment you are able to establish mindfulness, now you are no more a victim of the hindrance. Rather, regain the mindfulness. Now you have established the mindfulness. Now even the hindrance can be used to further enhance your vigilance, further enhance your investigation. So that is the beauty where Buddha explains in the Dhammanupassana. So once you are able to establish mindfulness, so even these hindrances can be used to develop enlightenment factors. Because you are able to recognize lust as lust, greed as greed, or hatred as hatred, restlessness as restlessness, regret as regret, doubt as doubt. So you are clearly recognizing, and you know how they are arising, and you know how they are present, you know how they are fading away. Now, these are very subtle aspects of the mind, say we can say very subtle defilements. So if you are able to clearly recognize them, so that shows, so the investigation is there, Dhamma Vichaya is there, and you are not discouraged or being afraid of these hindrances. Rather, you know that you are confident that you can overcome them. So the effort is there, the virya is there. And assume that now it is fading away and you are quite confident now they have faded away. So you become again calmed down, again peaceful. Now the tranquility enlightenment factor arise. Now, once these hindrances are passed away or they are fairly ceased, so again mind is still. There is nothing to agitate. It is not restless. Now again it has regained its stillness. Now nothing to do. No action to be taken because you have regained the stillness. Again the mind is calmed down. Again the necessary balance, equipoise is there. Now you simply have to be equanimous. Upekkha Sambojjhanga has to be developed. So likewise you can see, you can revisit all these areas. Now you can use Kayanupassana, the mindfulness on the body, to develop enlightenment factors. You can use Vedananupassana to develop enlightenment factors. You can use Chittanupassana to develop these awakening factors. And you can use various other Dhammanupassana techniques even to develop enlightenment factors. Say for example, you are recognizing various aggregates. So assume that you are going through some experience, and there you, rather than being driven by this experience, you are able to come out of the experience and look at the experience. So you are able to now establish mindfulness. And there you recognize, okay, these are the bodily parts. These are the physical aspects of this experience. This is how physical aspects are, or physical phenomena are contributing towards the experience. So you are investigating. And these are the feelings of this experience. Assume it's a pleasurable feeling. So you are able to properly recognize it. So you are investigating. And okay, this is the perceptions that sort of available in this experience. And these are the fabrications, these are the constructs that I have done in this experience. So I am using the normal terminology, I, etc., just to easy communication. So these are the sort of constructs, or these are the fabrications that I have done into this experience in order to come to this level of experience. And these are the contributions coming from various faculties, by seeing, by hearing, by tasting, by knowing, cognizing, all these things. So this is the consciousness aggregate. So likewise, assume that you are able to properly recognize the aggregates available in a particular experience. So this is where actually we are investigating. This is where the mindfulness is available. And we are having a fair amount of energy. And once you are able to recognize all these components, their contributions, now the whole experience become sort of disentangled. You are no more a victim of any of these aggregates. You are no more driven by the experience. Rather, the whole experience become disentangled, unentangled. Now the mind again calms down. Again, the agitation has gone. Again, mind becomes still. Again, mind is calm. Again, tranquil. Now you can see the enlightenment factors are working. And once it is back to normal, nothing to do. Equanimity. So likewise, the whole vipassana, we can say, is contributing to the development of enlightenment factors. So I think... So that is what I have to mention about these enlightenment factors. So in this Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha mentioned, so one is developing these enlightenment factors. If they are not once they are available, once they are present, this yogis know that they are present. Once they are not present, he know they are not present, and he now know what are the strategies to develop them, to arouse them. And once they are available in the mind, he know what are the strategies to further develop them. So likewise, he is developing enlightenment factors, and he can inferentially know that what are the present, how they are present in another person's mind as well, because he very well know how his mind is appearing and his body is behaving when certain enlightenment factors are present. Similarly, he can inferentially can understand, okay, this person is now agitated, this person is now calmed down, this person is operating with some wisdom, this person has gone through some, say, lethargy, laziness. So likewise, you can feel another person's mental state since you have a fair understanding about your own experience, for you, about your own mind. Now, and one can understand the fluctuations of the enlightenment factors. At one time, certain enlightenment factors are present. At another time, they are not present. At one time, they are said of strong. At another time, they are weak. So one can understand these fluctuations of the enlightenment factors. So they are also not permanent. They are also going through various fluctuations. Now, therefore, one uses these enlightenment factors themselves to further strengthen one's mindfulness, wisdom, and one maintains one's mind sort of free, unassociated, not grasping with anything. Now there you can understand the three stages. So we recognize enlightenment factors where the mindfulness is established, that is the satipatthana, establishment of the mindfulness, and one understand the levels, the states, intensities of the enlightenment factors. So that is the satipatthana bhavana. So one understand the fluctuations, what are the strategies to do, etc. So that is satipatthana bhavana. And one has to maintain this path. One has to walk in this path. It is not a single day, it is not a 1 week. Rather, it becomes kind of a life skill. It's a kind of a lifetime endeavor that one has to undertake. So there one understand, okay, I need fair amount of morality. One has to maintain the morality in the mind, in the body, in the speech. And one has to maintain kind of a clarity of the mind. And again, one has to develop further wisdom. Sila, Samadhi, Panya has to be developed. So that is where the Satipatthana Bhavana Gaminicha Patipada, the path is available. So likewise, even in this section, we can look at in the context of establishing mindfulness, development of mindfulness, and a path leading to the development of mindfulness. So that's the Satipatthana. So likewise, so these enlightenment factors are the fourth part of this Dhammanupassana. With that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Well, one of the questions is, how would a diligent practitioner get an indication that enlightenment factors are gradually evolving?
Yeah, that actually the practitioner himself have to know. Say, for example, say if you compare yourself 1 year ago, how is your mindfulness? How is your investigative qualities? What is the level of effort? How was the mind tranquility? Is it tranquil? What is the equanimity? Now, say for example, 1 year ago, say your mind is not that mindful. There are many situations that you were unmindful. But today, assume that you have a fair amount of mindfulness. You can maintain again the kind of effortless mindfulness even. And 1 year ago, you are mindful on various objects. Consistently, you are now trying to establish mindfulness on walking, sitting, rising and falling, breath, say element characteristics. So all the objects. So you are trying to be mindful on various objects. But assume today, you don't need any object. Rather, mindfulness is available. It is effortless, objectless. So there's a significant involvement in the mindfulness enlightenment factor. Similarly, say investigation, Dhamma Vichaya. At the earlier stages, say 1 year ago, you are investigating certain enlightenment, so certain characteristics. Later, say if those characteristics become fairly clear, say in during the walking meditation, at the beginning you could only recognize hardness, say for example. But after 1 month, you recognize even stiffness. Another month, you recognize not only this, hardness, stiffness, roughness, maybe warmness, coolness. So many other subtle aspects also being recognized. So this is an improvement. Later, even now you can recognize various feelings. And even you can recognize various mental states, very subtle defilements. So this is a development of the investigation. Now you are not limited to the kaya anupassana. Now you can even deal with feelings. You can deal with various mental states, hindrances, and one can even develop, recognize enlightenment factors. So this is a development of the investigation, dhamma vichaya, and effort. Say at the beginning you have very sort of severe effort. So you are so energetic. You are sort of maintaining a strict schedule that is also required. So you are driving yourself. But later, say now your practice is maturing and you are sort of establishing mindfulness. So you are able to know about yourself. You have very good developed self-awareness. Now you don't need to struggle in a way. So you know what to do. You have some hands-on experience. So at that level, you are now sort of change in the effort. Now you are not struggling, rather you are maintaining sort of consistent effort. And later, you are simply balancing the enlightenment factors. You are simply balancing the necessary qualities, and it's a kind of effortless kind of practice. Now the effort has evolved. On the other hand, if we say the rupture, At the very first moment, say once you succeeded, so you are extremely happy, you are even excited because everything was successful and you are observing the rising and falling, etc., and extremely excited. Rupture. But later, and it becomes sort of a known fact, it becomes quite evident to you. So there are the, you don't need to get excited, rather it's a known fact, it's the reality. So you are now more matured. Now the rupture has evolved to sort of a contentment. And then the tranquility. There was no tranquility at the beginning. So your body was aching and the mind was restless, etc. But later, once you are able to establish mindfulness, so there are fair amount of peace is available in the mind. You feel lighter. The bodily aches and pains have gone. So the tranquility is there. And later, say the tranquility, calmness becomes sort of inherent quality of the mind. Now you don't need to sort of purposely do it unless your mind again become restless because of any kind of careless, unmindful sort of an activity. So again, assume that your mind become restless, then only you have to again regain this tranquility. Otherwise, this tranquility become inherent quality of the mind. Similarly, say samadhi, as I mentioned at the beginning, you are concentrating, you are strictly maintaining your attention on a particular phenomena. But later, as I mentioned today, so it is not so. All the phenomena have faded away, mind has found its own freedom, mind becomes secluded. So mind become expansive now, expanded stillness is there. So the samadhi has completely evolved. It has completely evolved from concentration to sort of a stillness. Expansive stillness is available in the mind. So the complete evolvement is there. And at the beginning, there was no much equanimity at all because you have to do a lot. You have to involve in the practice. You have to drive the practice. You have to take care of the mind. There's a fair active participation. But later, it is kind of observing, witnessing, kind of a passive observation. So things are happening, the meditation become part of your life. So you simply, it's a matter of maintaining it, maintaining the qualities. So the equanimity is fairly established. So likewise, you can see with the practice over several years, so there is an involvement of all these enlightenment factors. Back to you, Jennifer.
Bhante, on a practical aspect, so we mentioned about the three groups of enlightenment factors. So practically, let's say that we notice that our mind is very excited, and so we need to apply the, you know, second set, the tranquilizing mind factors. But last week we also talked about that these factors are kind of a natural progression. So, but even when we realize, notice that we need more of the other set, how do we apply more of that, even though it is a kind of a natural progression? Does that question make sense? So, so in the case of, like, I was saying, we have an excited mind, and so we know that we need, you know, maybe more concentration or equanimity or tranquility. And my understanding is that I don't think we can promote more equanimity and tranquility specifically, but maybe perhaps we can build more concentration by depending on where we are in the practice. So if we are just in the beginning, we can focus more attention on the changes of, you know, one particular area, let's say, of the body, to promote, you know, more of that balancing factor. Is that understanding correct, Bhante?
No, actually, it depends. So, as you said, if one doesn't have a fair amount of hands-on experience on the enlightenment factors, he don't have the enough training or enough hands-on experience how to balance these. So there's a beautiful example given by Venerable Sariputta. So he is telling, so like you select your desired cloth, say during the winter time you are wearing winter clothes, during the summer you are wearing whatever the appropriate clothes. So likewise, I mean, depending on the occasion, you select necessary clothes. You select the appropriate clothes. Similarly, Venerable Sariputta mentioned that he has the capacity and to recognize what are the ones available, what are the ones not that available, or what are the ones weak, and accordingly he has gained kind of mastery of enlightenment factors. So he's a kind of a mastery of enlightenment factors. Now, it does not mean that you are maintaining them to the fullest, complete, 100% perfect balance. There may be fluctuations. So once these fluctuations happen, so you are able to recognize the state of the mind. Okay, which one is less? Which one is the mind agitated? Is the mind sort of lethargic? So these two extremes can be easily recognized. Accordingly, now you give prominence to the particular group. So that group being given high favor, so that group being strengthened, now again mind become balanced. So likewise, you can't say that only the concentration is the one doing it. It appear like this. Now, when we are, say for example, if your mind is agitated at the beginning, at your early stages, say certainly if the mind is become restless, agitated, you have to establish mindfulness on the body. True. Say you are putting your attention to the posture, you are putting your attention to the rising and falling, you are putting your attention to the breath. So that is the only refuge. So you are again calming down, again tranquilizing, again concentrating. True. But later, say you are at another level. So you have understood, okay, I have the skill to maintain an unattached mind, unassociated mind. Not necessary to have a constant object, not necessary to have a mula kamathana, not necessary to have a primary object. So mind has the capacity to maintain its freedom. So you have to come, you, if one have that that kind of a practice, even on such situation, again mind can become restless. Say you went through some hard situation, someone else has given you trouble, and again somehow mind become agitated, again restless. True, it can happen. Now, in the worst case, you can go back to the breath, you can go back to the posture, you can go back to the, say, rising and falling. True, no problem. But at the same time, probably you can see, even though mind has become restless, even though you went through hardship, even though someone has looked down, even though someone has blamed you, still the mind's clarity is available. Still the mind's stillness is not harmed. It has temporarily gone through some sort of a fluctuation, but it is not harmed. You can again plug into that stillness. You can again establish in that stillness. It's very much like once you recognize that all the artwork being drawn on a canvas. So if you are able to penetrate the artwork and recognize the canvas, assume that you know very well there's a canvas. So always at any situation you can establish on the canvas. Likewise, so mind, the surface of the mind may get agitated, but still the deep stillness is available in the mind. It is intact. So there you can establish. It is not that you are concentrating. It is not that you are sort of narrowing down your attention to such stillness. Rather, you again sort of earthing yourself. So surface is fluctuated. Surface is having some sort of waves. But the middle is unbothered. Middle is unchanged. The middle is fairly still maintaining the stillness. So again you are regaining your stillness. Again you are earthing yourself, calming down yourself, not using a particular object. Rather, this stillness is there. That is the inherent quality. It is there. So likewise, so it depends on where your practice is and how you calming down yourself. It depends.
Thank you very much, Bunting. Another question. So it says, Namaste, Bunte. With your permission, I would like to share my mindful eating report and receive Bunte's insights. Thanks for your metta. Bunte, is it okay for this person to share their mindful eating report?
Okay, no problem. You can have a mindful eating. I already had my breakfast, by the way.
Paul, I'd like to please have you on mute.
Yeah, please could you speak a little louder, please?
Okay, I was aware, I was looking at my food and the different colors and the shapes. I paused to take a moment to observe before and mindfully rushing in, as I sometimes normally do. Moving the spoon from the top of the bowl down, I was aware of the effort and the resistance and the pressure involved as I moved through my muesli and my oats. Bringing the spoon to my mouth, my neck and my head bent down. My mouth opened way before the spoon was close to my mouth, assuming my mouth. My second spoon, I was aware of the greater effort to be mindful as I brought the spoon to my lips, and then I opened my mouth. This spoonful, I enjoyed because it had a scoop of peanut butter. Going on, I noticed the weight of the bowl beneath my fingers, and I could hear the Kamachaka Kawasanasis playing in the background, and the sound of birds. Carrying on, I was aware of the sound of the peanuts and the muesli being crunched in my mouth. I focused on the left side of the back of my mouth, realizing the pressure that different foods required as I was eating banana and muesli and nuts. I shifted my focus to my right side and was aware of the same thing. I was aware of the moving of the spoon from the right side of the bowl to the left side of the bowl and the different pressure between having a
Yeah, interesting. So that's how actually more and more we become mindful. Like you have mentioned, more and more even subtle details going to be available for us. So at the beginning, you only recognize more distinct actions, prominent actions, but later even the most sort of very familiar or say ordinary kind of activities are also become available for you, and you can even be mindful on them. And it seems that you are gaining fair amount of mindfulness, and you have the interest to apply mindfulness to daily activities. That is a very good trend. So please continue, and even to other various activities, say even you are walking towards a shop, even if you are riding a bike, or if you are talking with someone, if you are brushing your teeth, you are wearing your clothes. So likewise, all the daily activities can be sort of make use of to develop mindfulness. So it's a good thing. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'd like to invite Namoka to please ask the next question.
Hi, Bhante, good morning.
Yeah.
I recently followed trying to use my defilements as a catalyst for wisdom. And to give an example, yesterday, even after doing a retreat, I was driving and my lane was blocked, and I indicated to change the lanes, and the guy behind didn't let me in, and I found that I was irritated. And on that, as I was driving, and I did manage to overtake him, and I even was mindful that my accelerator was I was putting it down so that I could overtake him. But soon after I did that, I knew this was a defilement, and I was mindful that I have to be more compassionate or whatever. And at that time, I know because I was driving, I couldn't concentrate too much, but is it possible to say irritated, and be mindful at that point?
Definitely, yes. Because, I mean, we should recognize defilements then and there. Now, it is not that we are trying to recognize defilements only on the cushion, but rather as you have correctly tried. So, they are available at practical level. So, while we are engaged with various day-to-day activities, so that is where the possibility to arise defilements.
And my second question is now, being mindful of that act at that time, and I'm very mindful for a length of time, say 2 or 3 seconds, what is, I know I have experienced this before, wanted to meditate in the morning and I felt a little sleepy, and I said sleepy, and maybe in another 3-4 minutes I was not sleepy and I was able to sit up. So what's the science behind it, Bhante, being so mindful? Do you thin it out, your defilements, in time to come?
No, basically, I mean, say in this this labeling, noting.
Yeah.
Now, say if you are able to recognize drowsiness, and if you are introducing a term, drowsy, sleepy, now you are slowly activating the mind.
Yeah.
Now, this, because of this activation, that sleepiness will go away. Again, mind regain its activity, again regain its energy. Energy, now you are not sleepy, no more sleepy.
Right.
So, but on the other hand, assume that you really want to become, you really want to go to sleep. At that time, we should not, I mean, purposely arouse energy or purposely too much excite the mind, because then you can't sleep. So there you have to allow the mind to calm down, and you have to reduce the activities. So allow the mind to become tranquil. So you are maintaining a very calm atmosphere in the mind, then mind may go to sleep.
Right. Okay. And over time, in Vipassana, when you are mindful and you develop your mindfulness quite well, does these defilements thin out?
Definitely, yeah. So that is the practice. I mean, that's why, I mean, say if you compare yourself, say several years ago, and you yourself need to know comparatively how is my mindfulness or unmindfulness. So I was completely restless, my mind was like a hell, and now how is it? I assume that we are with extreme hatred and we can't bear with anyone, and even a subtle thing I get agitated. So that was I. But how the situation present? So likewise, we have to we can compare the state of the mind several years ago and how is it now. I mean, Buddha actually mentioned, but the daily practice within a day, how much defilements have eroded, that we can't measure actually. It is very negligible. But over time, we can actually see a difference.
Yes, Bhante. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, welcome.
And for the next question, I'd like to invite Chita Devi.
Thank you. Bhante, I have just a few sort of queries. The first one is, in the seven factors of enlightenment, we do have to develop some amount of concentration to develop Priti and Pasati. Is that right, Bhante?
Yes, we can say so. That is actually when we are referring the early stages of the practice. We are still dealing with various phenomena, and we need to recognize various phenomena distinctly. So that requires fair amount of concentration. True. And as a result, when you succeed, say the rupture may develop.
So,
but
then later on, the Buddha also talks about the samadhi and the equanimity at the end. So is that a different kind of samadhi? Is that a stronger concentration that Buddha is referring to before we become equanimous?
So that is what I tried to explain you in the session. So the samadhi, what we talk at our earlier stages, are more towards the attention, more towards the focused attention onto a particular phenomena. So we are observing a particular phenomena. So we are well focused, distinctly focused on a particular thing, on something. Say breath, say rising and falling, posture, element characteristics, various types of feelings, etc. But later, the yogi recognizes kind of a freedom of the mind, non-attached nature of the mind, non-grasping nature of the mind. So there his mind becomes expansive. So their mind is not grasped onto anything, not even to breath, not even to a posture, not even to a, say, primary object. So when you are focused onto something, your mind become narrow. Your field of attention become very narrow. But on the other hand, as your defilements fading away, as the hindrance power fading away, as the enlightenment factors are increasing, so mind become expansive but not established. There's nothing to establish, nothing to hold, nothing to grasp, so therefore it is expanded. So the mind is expansive but still no distractions. So therefore there's a significant difference if you compare the very early stages of the concentration and the sort of latter stage of concentration. So that is where Buddha mentioned. So one has to maintain this expansive type of awareness, mindfulness. We can't say it as concentration, rather we can call it as a collectedness, awareness, expansiveness of the mind, and that has to be maintained fair amount of time. So that is where the sort of further removal of the, say, defilements are happening, because now mind is not grasping. Because, you know, whenever one has to sort of agitate the mind, now all these defilements have a certain amount of tension, certain amount of agitation. Now if you have to agitate the mind, you have to concentrate, you have to focus onto something, you have to grasp something, then only you become agitated, then only you become something. But if you want to avoid becoming, if you want to avoid agitation, you have to maintain this sort of clarity, simplicity, calmness, tranquility, spaciousness, non-grasping nature of the mind.
So at that stage of the samadhi, we are not necessarily having an object or as such.
Exactly.
It's a more relaxed form of concentration, but possibly deeper form of concentration. Would that be right if I said
yeah, that? Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that I was quite interested to understand better was, you said there was another mode of developing the enlightenment factors, and you said where the mind has found seclusion. You said aloneness.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we go through that path? Does that not happen automatically or naturally?
Yeah, it has to happen naturally. So the practice leads to that direction. So, say for example, at the beginning, say you are concentrating onto breath, concentrating onto various element characteristics, various feelings. Now you are distinctly know even minute feelings, for example, how they are rising and passing away. Each minute feeling, you are extremely concentrated, well concentrated onto that. So as a result, as you see their vulnerable nature, as you see their transient nature, so mind is gaining very deep understanding. So that is the impermanence, that is the understanding of transience of all these conditioned phenomena, and how vulnerable they are, how unsatisfactory they are, and how inconstant they are, and how non-governable they are. So as a result, no point of grasping, as a result, no point of holding to them, no point of keeping them as mine. So the mind starts to let go. So after letting go of everything, so there is nothing to grasp. So mind finds its own kind of a freedom. So that is the freedom that Buddha encourages at the latter stages. Okay, you now associate that freedom. It does not mean that you grasp that freedom. So that is also wrong. So you maintain that freedom in an effortless manner. So you need to recognize that freedom. So this is a kind of a very calm atmosphere in the mind, tranquility in the mind, peacefulness in the mind, non-grasping nature of the mind, spaciousness of in the mind. So that has to be recognized. That has to be given enough prominence. That has to be given enough appreciation. Otherwise, you even neglect that, because it has no excitement at all.
So, Bhante, you mentioned Viveka Nisutai, Viraga Nisutai, Niroga.
Nirodha. Nirodha. Nirodha.
And what was the last one? Vassagga. Did you say
Vassagga? Yeah. Vassagga Parinaming. Yeah, Vassagga Parinaming means that it is cultured, or it is seasoned through letting go. I mean, it is established in letting go, not on grasping. The typical nature of the mind is grasping, but now the attitude is entirely on non-grasping, simply letting go. Whatever happens, mind is not grasping, not holding, rather it simply slips it off, it simply let it go.
So this is all these seven factors of enlightenment are actually then helping us to go into at least the So tapana level, would that be right if I said that?
Not limited to that even. So actually that is fair. I mean, you can't say that there is a separate practice to attain Sakadagami, attain Anagami, attain Arahant. So this is the whole practice to the whole complete enlightenment, we can say.
Yes, 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 yeah. I understand. But at least the first stage for...
Yes, yes, we can say so. Yes, yes.
After that, of course, you can think of the other stages.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I was also very interested.
Actually, one small point I like to correct.
Yes.
So rather than we target those stages, or rather than we target those attainments, if we simply pay more interest on the development of the enlightenment factors or the practice, so then the attainments may happen. We don't have to follow them. We don't have to strictly, have to find out, I'm a sotapanna, I'm an anagami, etc., etc. I'm sitting just to become a sotapanna. So then it's a kind of a becoming, bhava tanha.
Yes, yes, Bhante, yes. That's a craving anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a craving anyway. No?
Exactly,
then that's
exactly.
It's a dukkha anyway, and then it's We are not getting out of it then.
Yes, yes.
The other thing that this question was early asked by Jennifer, but I was interested when you said that we can actually develop this. You said activating enlightenment factors and equanimous enlightenment, or tranquilizing enlightenment factors. You mentioned those two. I thought, as she herself said, I thought they can come naturally, with that we can't really make it happen. It happens.
Yeah, we can say so. So as you can see, Buddha mentioned kind of a gradual development of the enlightenment factors. Now, starting with mindfulness, then going to investigation, then to effort, then to rapture, then tranquility, then concentration, and ultimately to the equanimity. So there's a kind of a gradual order in the development.
Yes.
So once you have some understanding about this, so even unknowingly we do it. Say, for example, if you feel that your mind is restless, so at that time, we are simply calming down ourselves. So we simply sit, or we simply go to a walk, and we not allow them, we simply use our posture, to our, say, breath, etc., at the earlier stages to calm down ourselves. That is where we given prominence to the concentration. So instead of investigation, we now sort of calming down. So therefore, these are practically available, but here Buddha explains them very beautifully in a more careful and precise way for us to understand.
So these are also, I find that these are interchangeable. When I'm meditating, there are times when I have the prasaddhi and I go into a concentration. But then again, I have the priti element coming in as well. And so I find that it's not all just you come to a level and you're sitting there. It can be interchangeable. Would that be correct, Bhante?
Interchangeable in the sense, they can vary. So
yeah.
These enlightenment factors, their qualities, their amounts, levels can vary.
Yes.
So,
one can be more, what I was trying to say was, one can be more, though we are now feeling prasaddhi and feeling comfortable and all of them, then after a while, the priti element is more, is stronger. So is that right?
It actually depends. So someone, the priti can be stronger. For him or her, he value that. But later, say someone may simply value not that kind of a rapturous kind of a mind, but rather sort of a subtle contentment, kind of an awareness, equanimity. So that is where our maturing happens. Say, for example, even in the samatha meditation, say in the second jhana, Buddha mentioned it is rupture. Piti is the most prominent. So Piti is anyway little vulnerable. It is somewhat gross. Now that is why one may get into the third jhana. So it is more into the contentment. It is not exciting, but rather it is calming, more tranquil. And the fourth is equanimous. So even in the samatha approach, so this kind of maturity is there. So at the beginning it is so exciting, so elating, and all these things are there. But later you come to a more kind of a calm, happy, comfortable, contented atmosphere. And then you are going to the complete kind of equanimity.
Yes, Bhante, but when I find that sometimes when I'm in a very content, calm sort of way,
yeah.
Then I find that sometimes I have waves of preeti coming.
Fine.
And then I go back to the...
No, it is not, I mean, you don't need to suppress them.
Yes,
so
it just comes.
Yeah, let them come and you see how they also come and go.
Yes, that's what I do, Bhante.
Yes, that's fine. So they are also, they are also impermanent. They also have the nature to come and go. They also have the nature to arise and pass away.
Yes, Bhante.
Yeah.
But also in real life now, when I'm listening to the Dhamma also, I have a sense of asaddi, Bhante. So even with the outside the meditation, we can develop these qualities.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Depending on the situation, of course.
Yes.
But even just sitting on your own and watching nature, sometimes, you know, you can develop asaddi, Bhante.
Yeah, can. That's why, I mean, it is not limited to any particular, say, meditation technique. Certain enlightenment factors have a fair contribution towards the atmosphere. Now that is actually being discussed in the commentaries. Now say, for example, if you are maintaining a very pleasant atmosphere in your garden, in your home, everything is in order, everything is well cleaned, so the mind automatically become tranquil.
That's so, right, Bhante.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Okay.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Indira to please ask the next question.
Ante, with your guidance, I've been able to calm my mind when there is some disturbance happens. Applying these enlightenment factors and defilements and all that. But recently, I took the vaccination. And then these body aches are very often coming out. You know, I feel the body aches. So that also, when I get the body aches, I think like I feel lethargic. I have my doubts whether I'm going to die or whether I've taken the wrong thing, you know. But with that, it's very difficult to calm my mind, not like the other thoughts or anything. So can you explain it more? I think you explained it, but I didn't get that properly,
Bhante. Yeah, one point is that, as I mentioned, even the Arahants, even the Buddha himself, has gone through various illnesses. So that is unavoidable. And so once the body is sick, so we can't have the same level of strength or the mental strength. So since they are interdependent. But on the other hand, if you are trying your best, you can avoid making the bodily sickness go towards kind of a mental agony, kind of a mental stress. Because sometimes what happens is, so we introduce kind of an I component, kind of a self view into the picture, and then we become so much depressed. Why it is happening to me, poor me, it is always happening to me. I am really sort of unfortunate. So likewise, you are making a very self-centered kind of an atmosphere that really aggravates the situation. Rather than doing that, if you can simply recognize, okay, there's a bodily pain. Bodily pain is bodily pain. So it also is sort of impermanent. It also may somehow sort of recover. And at this moment, it is severe even. At this moment, it is something unbearable. But we have to be patient with that. So with this kind of a patience, with this kind of attitude, we can avoid mind getting agitated, mind becoming sort of restless, mind becoming sort of sorrowful. So this is where the patience is quite relevant. So bodily pains are there. So how I can at least maintain the mind quiet, maintain the mind unagitated. impatient. So that is where we have to be careful. Actually, at one occasion, when Anatha Pindika visiting the Buddha, so he mentioned that so he is now getting old, and the whole body is sort of aching, etc. So there, Buddha mentioned, okay, you now. This is the way of the body. I mean, even a single moment, if one says that I am completely healthy, the body is completely healthy, Buddha says that is because of one's ignorance. It is not healthy. This body is constantly subject to various changes, ailments, sicknesses, etc. So it's not even a single moment one can say that one is completely in perfect health. So that is the situation. So the advice of the Buddha is, now try to maintain a healthy mind. So that is his advice.
That means here I am grasping to mind, no? I myself. Like,
yes.
That is why I feel it more and more.
Yeah, that actually giving you more trouble than the body. Because mind become sort of, what you say, frustrated because of this introducing of I. So I am suffering, so I am going through, did I make the correct dose, so did I make the correct vaccine, did they make a kind of a wrong thing or something like that. So that confusing you, that will make the mind more cluttered, so that is arousing more unhappiness, suffering than the bodily sickness itself.
It's clear.
Yeah, okay.
And for the last question for tonight, I'd like to invite Mahisha.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. I was listening to the whole discussion today. It's great that I thought I would like to share one of my experiences, but at the same time, I would like to say that, you know, how things actually needs to be practiced. So I was taking advice and guidance from both Chandratna Thero and Dhammajiva Thero for last, I think, three or four months. And I actually figure out, like, everything that they say, like, you know, I can remember Upamuru was saying that what we really doing is every day 1 hour or whatever we meditate, and then we wash a white cloth. So when we are meditating, we wash a white cloth, and then afterwards we're putting into it in a pond of mud, and then taking out the next day, again washing it, cleaning it to be white, and then again putting. Exactly, actually I experienced that in past few months, and then I decided, okay, this is not going to work. Let me think what actually Hamudru, I mean the Bhante was saying. And then I took time off last week for 8 days, and I thought I'm going to get rid of all this and try to meditate continuously. So actually I did that, and even I didn't cook because I arranged that I cooked the meals for the family, and then I told them that I'm going to go into 8 days locking out myself. And then I completely actually run a program for myself. So I use my time like 5-6 hours for a day, completely sitting and meditating. First 3 days was horrible. It was so painful, the whole body. And it troubled me so much, but I thought I'm not going to stop. So then after the 4th day, I was so good. And I feel so good for the body, and it's energized. And then actually I felt that I felt that my mind is actually kind of like calm. The Swami wants to say that like when you, the kite you released from the string. So the kite is floating in its own way in the sky. It goes up, it goes down, and sometimes it's hang on a tree. So like that, the mind was going like that. So I felt that at that point that my mind has been detached from the matter. So then I tried to examine the matter. What is this matter? And then I realized the defilements are coming. So I, because I learned about the five defilements, I managed to check one by one how these defilements comes and try to, you know, change the matter so that the mind getting disturbed. So that can be analyzed actually one by one. It's amazing actually. So one at a time, only one defilement comes at a time. And when you're closely looking at, you can see it appear. And then it takes you just few seconds, like I felt. And then when you watch it, it disappears. So it happens like that, like 4th, 5th, 5th, 6th day. And then 6th day, I think, I had a severe pain in my leg, in my right leg, while I was meditating. So I used the Paryanka. And I felt that actually my leg is going to cut off from my body. And then I thought, okay, I'm going to stop now. But again, I thought, no, I can remember that Buddha was having similar issues, like, you know, a lot of disturbances, and he got to determination not to stop for anything, even though if he's dead. So I thought, okay, I'll think like that. Only thing that can happen is either my leg will be completely paralyzed, or I will be dying now. So I thought, okay, don't worry, I'm ready for it. And I said, actually, then I realized how much of chemical reactions actually from brain. I felt it. The brain sends all sorts of different signals, and I feel like the, you know, like watery things coming all the way from the head, and then it's coming through my body, and then get onto my upper leg, and then it's coming down towards the knee, and then to the bottom. And slowly it comes and trying to actually aggravate this pain. And I keep watching that. I kept watching it so closely, and actually it was very heating then, and I was sweating like, you know, like I'm getting a heart attack. But I thought, okay, I'm not getting afraid. I will keep doing what I'm doing. So I keep watching completely. It was so painful. And then little by little, step by step, the pain reduced. And couldn't believe actually it was zero after some time. And then I was thinking, oh my God, what is this? And then after that I felt there's nothing. I could stay. So I was staying, and defilements, nothing comes up. No, I was watching for defilements, and then I thought I shouldn't do this, because then I'm inviting defilement and I'm seeking for defilement. So it's craving for defilement. And I thought, okay, I'll stop and I'll just keep watching. And then I realized, okay, tranquility. I don't know where I came, because I was listening to Chandrakant Sayar's talk last Thursday while in between my meditation program I decided for myself. And then I thought, okay, let me think about tranquility. So tranquility comes that, like I felt, shouldn't be craving or shouldn't be getting like what do you call aversion. Shouldn't be craving, shouldn't be aversion. So I was checking my mind, am I craving or am I aversion? Then I said, oh, none of them. So then I check again the defilements, what I'm having. And then I realized that Bhagavad was saying, have to check whether you have at least a trace of these defilements. If there is a trace of these defilements, then your mind is actually not completely liberated. So I was completely checking on that, stay some time, and then actually my time was up. So alarm went on. And then the next day, I didn't put the alarm. So actually, Bhante, I managed to, then next day I thought, okay, now I went up to there, and then I backed the, so one day I was backward forward, I thought I will try Anapanasati only. And then I tried Anapanasati only, and I didn't go for Vipassana. And then I ended up like I'm watching a TV screen, but with colors. So bubbles of different colors, green, yellow, red, appears, goes. It's actually like a clock. It comes and goes. I enjoyed it. It's actually like a movie, watching a movie. So then I was thinking, oh my God, where I am now, and I should be like this, and I feel like I'm a little bit like getting light into it. And then I stopped my meditation. And then again, in the evening on the same day, I thought, okay, I'm not going to go into that extent, like to watch a movie now. And then I went on Vipassana because I wanted to test how if I go only in Vipassana, where I would end. And then I went in that. And again, I managed to go like the other day, where I managed to say, like, you get rid of the string from the, I mean, Kali is just floating without someone holding the string. So, I don't know. I mean, I thought I would explain it, because someone asked about how the scientific side of how this pain happens. I actually felt that actually it's coming some kind of chemicals from the brain, and that's, if we keep on ignoring, actually that disappears. If we try to fight with it or think about it and be thinking about, oh my God, I'm going to, you know, depressed out of it and I'm sad, then of course it overcomes. It actually comes overpowering your mind. But if you keep on looking at it, it disappears. It fades off. So I recall all the memories about what Dr. Mahmoud was saying all the time, and also the Bhagavad Gita was saying. Time to time, they were, you know, in a blended form. They used to bring in the guidelines. So I feel like everything that they said, like little by little, in time to time, actually came to my mind. So I feel like we need to keep all the points that these Bhaktas are saying, because they are very useful tools when we are going on the journey. Thank you for listening,
Bhante, everyone. Yeah. Thanks for sharing your experiences. So one small thing I thought of adding is quite necessary to do this sort of fairly strict meditation. And as I said, as in the Buddha mentioned in the latter stages, so you have to do it in a more relaxed manner, a more allowing things to happen, accepting things, and allowing things to happen, and that sort of attitude, not like a more aggressive or more struggling kind of manner, but rather accepting things, maintaining a very tranquil atmosphere in the mind, not allowing the mind to become so rough or tough or something like that. But anyway, it depends on the person. So how different people have different approaches. But more and more Buddha helping us or guiding us more into a more allowing things, letting things happen, letting things go, and keeping the mind in a more calm, quiet, tranquil, non-agitated, non-constructive, not doing much of fabrications, etc. So when that is happening, so this equanimity, tranquility, kind of stillness, clarity, so they become sort of inherent qualities of the mind. So those are the ones Buddha asks us to sort of say guard, or that is the direction that Buddha helps us to sort of develop. So that is where Buddha mentioned, so if one is developing enlightenment factors, so that is leading towards fading away of the anusaya, fading away of all the fetters, fading away of all the defilements. So the enlightenment factors developing. So if I refer, so one sutta called Bhikkhu Sutta in Bodhjanga Samyutta. So there Buddha mentioned, if one is developing all these enlightenment factors while maintaining seclusion of the mind, while maintaining kind of dispassion in the mind, maintaining the cessation aspect, and maintaining kind of a letting go attitude in the mind, so that is leading or causing to the fading away of defilements. Kama savapi cittam vimuchyati, bhava savapi cittam vimuchyati, avijja savapi vimuttam cittati vimuchyati. So all these asavas, all these cankers are now fading away. So you are developing an entirely different approach, going against the grain, and the defilements are fading away. So with that note, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. So I think we have spent 1.5 hours almost, even more than that. And actually, I really appreciate your active participation. And most of you are really benefiting from this session. That is the good thing. So let's try our best to make use of this Buddha's teaching to our own practice. So that is the whole purpose of this session. So with that note, let's recite the traditional verses. Ittavata ca amhehi sambhataṃ punya sampadaṃ sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata ca amhehi sambhataṃ punya sampadaṃ sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata ca amhehi sambhataṃ punya sampadaṃ sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු